Blog Talk Radio.
Wins.
Losses.
Shutouts.
Shootouts.
Forehand.
Five hole.
It's time for your recap of Pittsburgh Penguins hockey.
The most important interviews, best information, hottest news, and no topic is off limits.
Radio PI. Now on the Radio PI Podcast Network.
The best thing sports has to offer is a Game 7. The NHL's Eastern Conference Finals will go 7 games. They award us with a Game 7, thanks in part to the Pittsburgh Penguins' victory on the road, breaking the scoreless snide from the end of the third period in overtime of Game 5 and breaking the losing streak from games 4 and 5. The Penguins get the win. The Penguins start off flying. The Penguins start off hot. The Penguins give you maybe the best effort they've given you throughout these playoffs and this series in particular. Stars started it, and their role players finished it. Sidney Crosby with a back-breaking, heartbreaking goal that would make Shawn Michaels proud. Rust with a Shawn Michaels-style heartbreaking goal of his own that kind of clinched the victory. They later would get one on an empty net. Penguins getting a 5-2 win. And the score is not even indicative of how dominating they were throughout. Matt Murray did, I believe, see 30 shots against, which is surprising because Tampa Bay barely even got over double digits through the first period and a half and didn't get that many scoring chances either. I even joked on Twitter about a period or so into the game that as much as Matt Murray was the right decision after Fleury's faltering in Game 5 for Matt Murray to start this Game 6, I think Zach Cobb, Jari, or maybe even myself could have gotten this victory based on how things were going with the lack of offensive rush and puck possession for Tampa Bay, unlike they had. Games 4 and 5, they were dominating puck possession. Puck possession certainly can be indicative of who gets these victories, kids. You may hate on analytics and those fancy stats, and I'm not saying that I'm 100% with them, but I'm enough with them to know puck possession, which is how you simplify it, is a big deal. Tampa Bay sucked on puck possession in this one. They were great at it in games 4 and 5. They sucked in game 6. They lose. Penguins sucked at puck possession in games 4 and 5. They were great at it here in game 6. They win. We'll see who's better at it in game 7. And if that is a factor and that is the key to who ends up winning the conference, goes to play for the Stanley Cup, and wins Game 7. Game 7 will be Thursday night in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Continental Energy Center. Remains to be seen whether Brett Kiesel, Garrett Cole, and maybe even Shawn Michaels will be back in the house. Shawn Michaels is unlikely, obviously. Granted, over one with him in the building in his hockey fandom career. Never even been to a hockey game before that Game 5, and they didn't show up for him despite the fanfare. But I moaned and complained all about that on the Game 5 post-game show. This is the NHL Eastern Conference Finals Game 6 post-game show here on the Pens and Chevrolets and the Radio PI Podcast Network. I am your host, as always, Mike Ostie, and I will be joined alongside by my tag team partner here at Radio PI and the Pens and Chevrolets, Nick Case, as he will deliver his case in point of the Penguins' Game 6 win, 5-2 over Tampa Bay, picking up the victory and taking us to a Game 7. Getting Malkin guaranteed, we go to Game 7. I don't know if I put it up there with Joe Namath and his finger salute and his guarantee, or Mark Messier guaranteeing in 94 for the Rangers en route to a cup. Kind of guaranteed. I don't know, maybe more media-driven, but he said we'll be in Pittsburgh for Game 7. So take that for what it is worth, whether it's a guarantee or not. He did his part. He played well. You're not going to see the Malkin killer goal that you would expect from him. He's still not taken over a game yet that we know any Malkin can do, and he did during the 09 Cup run, a Conn Smythe run for him. He has the best in the world ability, MVP type player. haven't seen that from him yet this series. We are starting to see more of it from Sidney Crosby, though. Sidney Crosby with that overtime game winner earlier in the series, would later score another goal in a game and then gets a goal here. And this goal here tonight, if the Penguins do win the Stanley Cup, and no, this has not been the very best playoff run for Sidney Crosby. He's had better playoff runs but haven't got this deep in a postseason in terms of points and goals. But he's giving you big moments. When they need him, he is coming through. That overtime game winner, without it, obviously they'd be eliminated and it would be over, and that is his only playoff overtime goal of his career. Mario Lemieux never did that, so Crosby has that on the books ahead of Mario. Then this one here tonight in Game 6, that goal was the dagger. That was the heartbreaker. That was the sweet chin music of Game 6 in the Tampa Bay Lightning to get us to Game 7. That goal by Crosby, being the best player in the world, being the guy that they want to produce, being the guy that fans and media are calling for to carry him when they need him the most, he gave him that boost emotionally as well as on the scoreboard. And then that depth took over and they just out-hustled Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay gave him a surge late. Tampa Bay came up strong late. You thought, oh, here we go again. Game against Washington, even going to Game 5 where Tampa Bay comes back and then wins it in OT. Rolling your eyes, getting a little too excited, but the Penguins hold on, and their depth, capped off by a rough goal, ends up really sealing the deal, and then they would end up winning it 5-2, winning Game 6, going to Game 7. We'll have a Game 7 in Eastern Conference Finals. And these Stanley Cup playoffs have been entertaining, to say the least. There's been asinine drama, and we will talk all about it, at least from the Pittsburgh Penguins angle, and at least going from Game 6 now to Game 7 here on the Pens Initiative Airwaves. This radio cold broadcast here, the post-game show of Game 6 for the Eastern Conference Finals, is powered, I'd rather say powered than brought to you by, I want to be different, by Dr. Sheeler of Sheeler Chiropractics and DKPittsburghSports.com. And here he is. I did it for Bryce from Brooklyn. I gave him Biggie as a music. I did just because I wanted to when I talked with Jeff last post-game show about Wilkes-Barre Scranton and some Pens. So I'm going to do it for Nick. He's the godfather of this and then has let me take the reins a little bit here. So I'm going to do it for Nick. We're going to lead him in with some Shawn Michaels theme music, some HBK. HBK line played well again. Then the Penguins, that's fine.
I think I'm cute. I know I'm sexy. I've got the look that drives the girls wild. I've got the mood.
We will fade it. Nick, you are over top of Shawn Michaels' theme music on the Penguins victory show, post-game edition here at Radio PI. How you doing? Penguins actually get a win. So you return, and they win. You took a hiatus for a couple games. They lose. I feel like the shows I do by myself without you are only losses. I don't know. I'm like the host of when it's depressing, and you get to moan and complain and be angry. Although I guess that's kind of fitting, but happy to have you back.
You say I'm the godfather. These are the powers I have, the powers I wield, and the people I talk to make things happen.
I'll kiss the ring.
No, it's all coincidence, I promise you that. But, no, yeah, you got to take a couple games to decompress when it's this high intensity. And, you know, I'm sure Dr. Shaler himself is having a lot of good business from this playoff run right now with a lot of people with some stressed out necks and backs that he needs to correct. And I'm sure secretly he's given a little gold fist bump of his own for the way the Penguins are helping out his business right now.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. And up here at Radio PI with the promotions on these post-game shows, and I got to get myself over there. I got to get myself over to Dr. Sheeler Chiropractic and kind of give myself an adjustment from the stress of watching these post-game shows. But Nick, we got what we wanted. Everyone was calling, fans and media alike, calling for more from the stars of Malkin, Crosby, and Kessel's been producing, but Letang too. Letang a -4 last game. Crosby's not yet taken over a game, despite big goals earlier. Malkin's not been what you want from him. Everyone was calling for those guys to stand up here in Game 6 with the backs against the wall. They did, and they did, and then some.
Yeah, I mean, especially Crosby, How about this stat? The Penguins are 3-3 in this series. 3-game winners from Sidney Crosby alone. Now, two of them, granted, are on the piggyback of Tampa Bay coming and scoring two goals. But on the record books, he has 3-game winners in 3 games in this series. And people want more from him. People are not getting enough from him. Just silly. You see columns about lack of leadership from Crosby, and you see stuff like that, and you're like, what are you guys even watching? Because, you know, on the score sheet, okay, I get it. They're not showing up the way you'd like. I had a conversation at work tonight with a friend of mine who is a Penguins fan down here, and he's like, you know, you want to see more from these guys. And you're right. You'd love to see more from the score sheet on these guys. But they even showed a package of this during the game I was when I happened to glance up from work and watch. They're playing defensively, strong games. Mm-hmm. They had an entire package of showing Malkin and Crosby stealing the puck and back-checking and, you know, playing a strong defensive game. So, yeah, okay, they're not getting the points you'd like, but they're commanding top defensive pairings. And let's face it, they are playing with, you know, some guys that maybe aren't up to snuff, that are not a Bill Guerin type from the last Cup run, you know? They're not a Chris Kunitz from the past Cup run, even though this series
Can't be mad at Kunitz in this series, then.
Yeah, Kunitz has had some rough spots, but, man, this series, some big goals and some big assists and some big moments, like tonight to spring rust for the, you know, the cushion goal. It's, you know, you may not be getting the production you'd like from them, but I don't think it's out of line to look at that and say, look at the situations they're in, I understand.
Well, and it also takes a keen hockey eye. So casual fans wouldn't be included in this, and this isn't anything to attack them, but casual fans would not admittedly have a keen hockey eye. It takes a keen hockey eye sometimes to be able to determine whether a star player is helping you, even if he's not on the stat sheet. It's simpler and easier to say a LeBron James isn't doing anything for you if he doesn't get 20 points, doesn't get 10 assists, you're not seeing 5-plus rebounds. If he's producing a game where he has 13 points, 3 assists, and 2 rebounds, you and I, as well as casual fans and pretty much our grandmas, can probably sit there and say, that's not enough from the guy that we're paying $30 million to that's supposed to do it for us. But in hockey, it's more difficult. It's not just going to be goals. It's not just going to be assists. I mean, Bryce from Brooklyn has been a great caller for us, but he even said last postgame show, and he's admitted casual fan, that he wanted a hat trick from Crosby or Malkin. You're just not going to get that in these playoff games. The defense are keying in on them so much. They're not getting to play together like, say, for example, Pavelski and Joe Thornton are in San Jose, because some people are also saying, why are those two stars? Maybe it's because they haven't won a cup before. They just look so hungry. They're doing it and basically leading the way single-handedly, whereas the Penguin stars, Malkin Crosby, are sitting on their laurels without a ring or with a ring. I've seen that before. But the difference, those two guys are playing together. Crosby and Malkin are dealing with different pairings and different guys who are struggling and different players who aren't all world at their wing. So, yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head that they can be producing, they can be productive, and they can be helping you win and be, quote-unquote, playing well, even if they're not scoring goals and getting assists. Although I will say, those people can still jump at Malkin a little bit, even with some assists, and he got an assist tonight on 3 shots. He's not giving you the takeover game that maybe you'd want from him and we've seen before and did see in the 09 Cup run. But I feel like even the casual fan got to get off Sidney Crosby. How many more big goals do you want? You're not going to get him to score a hat trick every playoff game. It's just physically impossible. He gives you a heartbreaker goal here for Tampa Bay, basically the backbreaker to help win this game, the overtime game winner earlier in this series, and another critical goal in this series. So Crosby's giving you the goals that you need. He's giving you those big moments. You're in order to win a Stanley Cup, you need depth. You need the entire team pulling at the rope. You need role players to give you maybe cup-clinching goals. It's not always going to be the Mary Lemieux or Sidney Crosby. The only thing Sidney Crosby got going right now over Mary Lemieux in his career, Crosby has an overtime playoff game-winning goal. Mary Lemieux never did that. Are you going to be mad at Lemieux when they won those two cups? No, he's still part of the effort. It's about a team when you're trying to win these 4 rounds and how grueling this is.
And I want to say, yes, you're right about Malkin. You don't have him take over the games. You see that gallop. You see those bursts where he looks like he's in that mode where he goes into that and just takes over, drives the play. But we know going in, he's not healthy. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm not quick to say, well, why isn't Malkin delivering? Because we know he's got an arm issue or an elbow issue. We know something is wrong. But he's still going out there and grinding it out. You don't see him drifting away into the play. You don't see him not back-checking. You don't see him not giving his all, even though he's hurt. So, yeah, he's not out there commanding the play like he should, or like we've seen him, especially as, like you said, in the 09 Cup run, where in the Eastern Conference Finals and the Cup, he just ran roughshod over Carolina and Detroit. But he's not right. It's understandable that he's not. So the fact that you're even getting anything from him, I think, is a bonus. And you see him take over, and you see him have those spurts where he's got that gallop. And you know that gallop as well as I do. When he takes over, he's got that gallop that's like, all right, stand by, stay, get out of the way, I'm coming through. And he just powers to the net, fires off a backhander, forehander, any way he can get on net. And sometimes it works, and sometimes, like, was it last game, Vasilevsky just stopped him stone cold in front of the net on a great time, on a great chance, when he had that gallop and he had the great stick handle and had a great shot chance to put it behind him. But it's there. It's not consistent as we'd like, but it's there, and he's hurt. So, okay, I'm willing to let it go. But as far as we know, Crosby's healthy, and it was frustrating there for a couple series, especially against the Caps when he was shut down, but pairings were focusing in on him. They're keying in on him. And now maybe they're drifting away from him and focusing on the HBK line a bit more, and Crosby's starting to produce, and Malkin is starting to chip in here and there, and that's heading into Game 7. That's got to make you feel good.
What also has to make you feel good is, yes, we're not getting the Gennie Malkin from 2009. Yes, we're not getting Gennie Malkin who maybe even 100%, because really, and this might be blasphemous to say, and I'm not trying to feed any fire to the Civil War for some of the fans between Crosby and Malkin, and Crosby's a better overall player, but in terms of who scares you, if I'm the opposing team and I have a Gennie Malkin or Crosby coming at me 100%, full head of steam, ready to take over a game with the gallop, I'm probably more terrified of Malkin. That Malkin showed you that in that cup final against Detroit in 09. That was one of the best defensive teams in NHL history in that Red Wing team. And Malkin had the gallop and went right through Nicholas Lundstrom every single time. So the Malkin gives you that fear, maybe sparks more fear than even Crosby. And even while he's getting assists, you're just not seeing that. You're not seeing the gallop. You're not seeing the fear sparked. I'm not afraid of Malkin if I'm the opponent in this series. But the benefit is you may not need to be. You might not need to have Malkin at 100%. You might be able to give an 80% of Gennie Malkin who's still giving you random assists. Crosby doing this. Letang helping the defense and giving you power play tallies. Murray giving you enough in net now that he's stabilized himself in net. And Phil Kessel in the HBK line. That's why you got him in the offseason, to be that security blanket, that if Malkin or Crosby's not at their best, you have a big three. It can't be said enough about a big three. Look at the Blackhawks in their dynasty. Everyone's saying it should have been the Penguins. It was the Blackhawks. It should have been the Penguins. Well, Nick, what jump-started the Blackhawks to begin that dynasty? And Penguin fans don't want to hear this. But, yes, Kane and Taves were soaring, and they were great players. Once they got Marian Hossa and signed in the dotted line, they were a force to be reckoned with, because he became that big three that if Kane and Taves has an off night, Marian Hossa is a future Hall of Famer that can take over the game by himself. We are seeing that from Phil Kessel in these playoffs. Phil Kessel doing the same thing that Hossa did for the Penguins in 08, going to the Cup final, having that third head to this three-tiered monster is not something to be understated, and Phil Kessel has delivered on that in these playoffs.
And it's obviously what we saw in 2009, even 2008 to an extent, with adding Jordan Staal into the mix. And, you know, I'm not comparing Jordan Staal to Phil Kessel, because Jordan Staal is not on that level by any means. But when you combine Staal and Cook and Kennedy, you had essentially a top third line that can possibly be a second line, and made a huge difference. And so now to see that back, that depth, those three lines with the HBK line and then Malkin and Crosby with whomever they're with, it makes a big difference. And that three-headed monster, that, you know, three-headed monster staggy, as Ari would go on about. It's we have it back, and you want to go even deeper into the Blackhawks comparisons. It's not just those three guys, but you look on the blue line. They finally have a Letang that is comparable to the Duncan Keith of the Blackhawks, which just adds that extra little wrinkle that they finally have that. And you're right. Losing Hossa was hard on the Penguins. Sure, they won the Cup next year against him, which helped. But in the long run, how much better would Sidney Crosby have been? How many more goals would he have? How many more Cups might they have? Because they have that depth. Because they have that ability. We don't know. We'll never know. But Phil Kessel is definitely that kind of player that they were missing for quite a while.
You could argue that even though him and Ty Conklin, who gets named forgotten as well in postseason lore, but Marian Hossa being the only star player of those Penguin Red Wing Cup final years that didn't get a ring out of that, the Red Wings winning one year and the Penguins winning the other. He was on the losing effort both years. But you could argue that Marian Hossa had the last laugh of that era, because if Marian Hossa stayed in Pittsburgh, maybe the Penguins have a dynasty and not the Blackhawks. If Marian Hossa even stayed in Detroit, maybe Zetterberg and Datsyuk get another cup out of that group. By going to Chicago, he led them to that dynasty. Marian Hossa, that decision he made after the 09 Cup final loss with Detroit to Pittsburgh, that was a major deal to the next 5 or 6 years, and he set the course in motion for the Blackhawks to win three cups. They now have been eliminated and take a year off here, so it's the Penguins, Lightning, Blues, or Sharks time. Still going to the Eastern Conference, though. The Penguins getting a victory here in Game 6 to take us to Game 7. 5-2 win over the Lightning, dominating really from start to finish, hanging on and taking us to Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Now, Nick, how would you evaluate Murray? Because I think all of us, no matter what team you were on, Murray or Fleury going into Game 5, and I admittedly did shift and wanted to see Fleury get some action in that game. Fleury had his chance and didn't get the job done. You have to go back to Murray, who is still red hot and was the guy that got you there. You go back to Murray here, everyone kind of agreed with that at least. But Murray didn't face that many shots in the first couple periods. He did have to face shots late, but then allowed those two goals. Think what you want about those two goals. Where is your confidence in Murray for Game 7, taking into account that the last two games he's played haven't been as good as the previous two series and a half? He's been great overall, but the last about Game 4 and this game, it hasn't been necessarily A-plus like it was before. There has been a tailing off decline from him a little bit. Does it give you any reason for concern for Game 7?
I mean, concern a little bit, but I also realized watching this game, and I'm a big Fleury guy. I say this constantly. I've written about this. He's my guy. Same draft. Like, if I had been an athlete that was any good that played hockey, we would have had the same draft here. We're the same age. So, therefore, he's my guy. I've always loved him. But I don't think Fleury lost that game. I don't think he lost Game 5. I don't think he won it by any means, obviously. I think the entire team around him failed, and he looked shaky on top of that. So I understood completely going back to Murray. But I realized watching this game, I felt a lot more comfortable with Murray in that.
Did you?
Yeah, and like you said, Murray's stats, they've gone down a bit. And he's let in a few soft goals, and who knows? Fleury getting that game, letting him rest, might have done him a lot of good, actually. So it might not just have been a let's shake it up kind of move by Sullivan. It might have been strategy and gamesmanship. I might be giving Mike Sullivan too much credit at the same time, but it might have been him realizing Murray needs a rest. We can afford to lose this game if necessary. If Fleury pulls it out, great. And giving Fleury the go and letting Murray rest. I don't know. That could have been the case.
Maybe.
But either way, yeah. Like I said, I might be giving him too much credit. That's entirely possible. But either way, Fleury didn't play great. And that's an understatement. He didn't lose the game for him, but he didn't play great. I perfectly understood going back to Murray. I'm perfectly fine with it. And I think I'm about as fine as I can be heading into a Game 7 with a rookie goaltender as you'll ever be. The stats have slipped. He wasn't as sharp. But the Penguins did a good job protecting him, making sure he didn't face a ton of action. to kind of ease him back in, and he was comfortable once he was eased back in. So I'm not that worried. I think he's going to put in a performance that's more than enough to potentially win the game. But if they need him to steal a game, there may be an issue.
Matt Murray, the 10th goaltender in Stanley Cup playoffs NHL history with 10 or more victories in a postseason. So he's already joined a very short list for how long they've been playing for Lord Stanley's Cup. He's only the 10th goaltender, rookie goaltender, to get 10-plus wins in a postseason. I don't know how many of those won the Cup, but he's done his job so far. Now, to maybe play devil's advocate a little bit here, Nick, I'm with you. You got to go to Murray in Game 6. I don't think that Sullivan was necessarily resting Murray in Game 5. I do think him fading a bit in Game 4, the way they lost that game and pulling him, is part of why you saw Fleury in Game 5. Maybe he was even listening to fans and media, which he probably shouldn't have done. I was with Fleury starting Game 5. I thought he was the better overall goaltender. You had to give it a shot. If he did play well, you actually would have less of an asinine offseason, because now they're going to have to rush and scramble to probably trade him. Even if they don't want to, he'll probably request the trade, which people aren't realizing. But he didn't play well enough to stay in there. It wasn't because of him that they lost the game, but he did allow some soft goals. The thing is, though, Nick, to play devil's advocate, and this also goes back to how unfortunate some moments are for Fleury in his career. 300-plus wins in a Cup, borderline Hall of Fame resume as a Penguin, but he's never had the team be at their best when he was fully healthy, really. He got over the playoff postseason hiccup, then became elite, and then the team wasn't getting it done, and that's why they were losing in the playoffs. All of a sudden, it came together this year. Then he got hurt, loses job to a young kid, and then honestly, Nick, you go into this conference finals, I'm sure he's sitting there happy they won and happy for Murray, but don't you think in the back of his mind he's thinking to himself, what the hell kind of effort did I get from you guys in comparison to this? The Penguins gave such a great effort in front of Murray here in Game 6, and they gave such a bad effort in front of Fleury in Game 5 that I honestly believe, and this is no knock on Murray or even Fleury, that Fleury or Murray and maybe even Zakhoff could have won this game in Game 6 with this effort from the Penguins. They started this game with a determination they were going to Game 7. All their stars were at their best, or at least close enough to that. The role players were clicking, and Tampa Bay was not on their A game. They couldn't get shots off. They couldn't get puck possession. I think Fleury or Murray would have won this game, and Fleury's probably thinking to himself, the team weirdly plays worse when I'm in net, no matter how I do in comparison to Murray.
Yeah, and that's got to be – I mean, you know the guy – at least as well as you can from press releases and press conferences and locker room interviews. He seems like a guy that is genuinely team first. He wants his team to win. He wants to be part of that atmosphere. But there's got to be some frustration deep down inside, like, where the hell was this ever last game when I needed it too? I drag you guys through the regular season. I'm the only reason you guys make the playoffs, because without me playing lights out to start the season under – our horrible coach, we're not here. I mean, this is how you reward me? When it's finally my turn to take the reins? You give me that effort, and then the next night, two nights later, you don't play like this? Come on, guys. Monday night countdown, but come on, man. Where was this? And I'm sure it's in the back of his mind, because he's a good guy, and he is a team player, but he's still a competitor, and he wants to win, and he knows it's also not a team effort. I mean, it's a team effort. It's not just a singular effort, and he's got to know that his team was not there the same way they were tonight, and that's got to be frustrating, because in your eyes and possibly many people's eyes, that was your last chance to say, this is still my job. They come out and lay a dud, make you look bad when you're not steady, and now you're – future suddenly in question, when a couple months ago you were riding high as the guy, sustained a concussion, and it's all just kind of become topsy-turvy since then. That's got to be hard.
I'm sure it is, and I said that Fleury, now that he had that opportunity in Game 5, could only blame himself if he loses his starting job for good and Murray keeps it in the postseason and then becomes a starter next year and they have to dish him out, or he becomes the backup. But maybe Fleury's thinking to himself, well, yeah, I blame myself, no excuses, but I might blame the team a little bit around me, because as excited as they were in tapping him on the helmet before that Game 5 puck drop, they didn't give this kind of effort, and they just played poorly in Game 5, which is the reason why they were trailing 3-2 in the series. But that's all in the past now. They win Game 6 in dominating fashion. We're going to Game 7 now with Matt Murray in net. And, Nick, you wrote an article months ago. Once Matt Murray started to emerge, Matt Murray is now giving you 10 wins in a postseason as a rookie. You're looking like you're maybe going to a Stanley Cup final with him. Regardless, he's shown you so much. He's matured so much. He got to be the starter for next year, you'd figure, after Fleury lost that job again in Game 5. If that is the case and Matt Murray is now your guy for the goaltender position for the Pittsburgh Penguins for the next generation, ushering out the path to Marc-Andre Fleury, I'd imagine that you got to trade Marc-Andre Fleury and try to get something for him of value in what will be a very short offseason for the Penguins no matter what. You're looking at a month and a half, 2 months max if they lose Thursday to try to trade Marc-Andre Fleury and get some value for him. Teams will probably lowball because they know the Penguins are desperate. If you don't trade him the offseason, you're going to midseason of next year, but that might even be more of a scramble. It'll be difficult, but I'd imagine you're on board now based on this scenario with Matt Murray as a starter again, that you've got to dish out Marc-Andre Fleury, and even keeping in mind that Marc-Andre Fleury might say to you guys, look, I love my tenure here. I appreciated everything that you got done for me. It's a class organization, but I now request a trade because he's in his early 30s, as you said. You and him are the same age. It's not like he wants to quit, go retire, and be a backup forever at the very least. He probably wants to start somewhere else, and I'm sure some teams would still want him. He probably still has some value. So are you in now the camp that they have to try to get something for Fleury in the offseason?
I think you only try if Fleury asks, because it's easy enough to ride in a tandem next year. I mean,
true.
And, you know, it helps build Fleury's stock value. It helps him improve his trade value, which helps you. It makes Fleury look better, which helps him feel better, which helps the team better. And it lets Murray really kind of take his time getting in there, because at the end of the day, tomorrow he's 22. You know, he's still young. We don't know if this is a long-term thing yet. I think it will be. He's shown all indications that it will be. But are you really ready to hand over the reins of your hopeful dynasty that still has 4 or 5 years of cup contention to a 22-year-old that has, sure, excelled in one postseason run, but hasn't shown you anything at the upper and most professional level to say, this is sustainable, this is a long-term answer? Not yet. You have that hope. You have that suspicion.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think you have a definitive answer. So trading away your current franchise goalie based on one long-term run, it's a little short-sighted. Some cases it works. I mean, look at the Hurricanes. They got a solid career out of Cam Ward after he led them to a Stanley Cup final, including seeing them go to another Eastern Conference final against these Penguins, which they were trounced in, but they went with them. On the other hand, you have somebody like Jim Carrey with the Washington Capitals, who had a stellar postseason run and was given the reins and flamed out in a few years. I don't think, unless Fleury requests a trade, you're at a spot yet where you can say, we're definitely making that switch. I think you need a transition year, and then you can ship one out, but I don't think it's yet. I think the smart GM move is to kind of ease it in. And unless one person's ego is greater than the other, that's how you approach next season.
And you bring up Jim Carrey. As I'm looking at my Jim Carrey autographed picture that reads "Spank you very much" from a book report I did in the fifth grade, where I studied him and wrote him a letter, and he gave me an autographed picture. And I don't mean the goaltender. I'm talking about the Jim Carrey from Ace Ventura, The Mask, Man on the Moon, and all that fame.
That's
prized possession for me. It's prized possession. It says, thank you very much. I went to a Catholic school, so I actually got some Snickers when I showed teachers what he wrote on it, because everyone was so excited. They're showing what anyone that got an autograph back before we had to write to some celebrity, somebody famous we respected. I wrote to Jim Carrey, an idol still of mine, and he wrote, thank you very much, which I thought was cool as hell, but they didn't seem to appreciate the spank you instead of thank you, but whatever. but I still got it. I still got it framed, and it's not had one crack on. It is still in mint condition, and I give it a little pat each night before I go to bed.
That's awesome.
I would imagine that in an ideal scenario, you would keep Marc-Andre Fleury as a security blanket of sorts, because if Matt Murray, who then will be 22 only, if he does falter, if this is just one flash in the pan, miraculous, even if it's just one postseason and they win the cup, he'll be remembered forever in Pittsburgh lore. But if it's just the one postseason, then he goes down the tubes, you're going to need somebody else. Fleury's still young enough. He's still proven he can do it through a regular season at least. And he still has a lot of value. So ideally, they would keep him, and maybe he'd even reclaim the starting job next year, because we've also seen in hockey, it's very fickle for a goaltender like a quarterback in football, where you can have one great postseason and win a championship, and the next year, a couple bad games, and all of a sudden you're crap again and you lose your starting job. So we can't guarantee that we're not sitting here in December of next year, if we're still doing these podcasts, talking about Fleury as a starting goaltender on a defending cup champion Penguin team that won a cup with Murray. That's not an impossible. I don't think anyone would bet money that that's physically impossible to be occurring. So ideally you keep both. But I do believe, though, they're such a classy organization. They know what Fleury's meant to them for so many years, that in the off season, cup or not, if Fleury goes to them respectfully and says, I would like to be able to go to a team where I can start at my still young age, I believe they would grant that request. I don't think they would force him to stay there and be the backup and try to reclaim the job. I would imagine they would grant the request, even though it would be very hard in a month and a half to try to get somebody for Fleury. But I would imagine, do you agree with me there? I would imagine that if he requests a trade, they would honor it, even though they don't have to necessarily.
No, absolutely, yeah. And and it's not entirely out of the question either. I mean, and I think it all depends on how much the guy wants to stay in Pittsburgh, or if he's just anxious to go ahead and figure out and settle into a new life. Because when he signed his long-term deal a couple of years ago, it seemed like he was the guy for the rest of his career. And I'm sure he was settled in. He's been on the team for 10 years now. He was settled in. He has a home in Pittsburgh. His wife and his kids are there. And now suddenly this guy comes along, this Matt Murray guy.
Damn Matt Murray. I'm sure his wife
Yeah, exactly. So it comes down to, all right, do we want to stay here for another year and just kind of figure out what we want to do? Or do we want to just go ahead and get the next chapter of our lives together and just start it? And that's not an easy decision to make, especially in a month and a half's time. If he's already made it in his mind, I'm sure that's a lot easier. But the guy has emotional ties here. And it can't be simple. But if he has decided it's time to go, there's no way the team doesn't acquiesce and say, all right, we're giving you your go. Well, where do you want to go? Because he's got a limited no-trade clause. He can choose where to go. And from there, you see how it plays out and hope for the best. But there's no way that if he requests it, they don't honor that request.
I'd be interested to see what they get in terms of value, too, though, because it is a short off season. If he requests a trade and that gets out to the public, the teams then are going to be aware the Penguins are hurrying. They're going to probably try to lowball him. And not many contending teams, like the first team that popped in my mind is the team they face in two cup finals with Fleury, and that would be the Red Wings. I mean, the problem with Detroit is they don't have a goaltender, basically, and they have some young players as they're trying to move to a different era as well. Fleury is still young enough to bridge that gap and make them able to maybe win a postseason series again. So I could see that maybe being a team that has some interest. There's a few others, but the grass might not be greener. It might be better for Fleury's career to even be a backup for 1 year, start 25, 30 games, maybe more than most backups, get some more wins, beef the individual resume, impress some teams, either have someone go after you in the middle of the season at the trade deadline, or even next off season when there's less pressure, and maybe you'll go to a better situation. Because I don't think the Penguins are going to want the Red Wings or anyone to lowball them. They're not just going to give away Fleury for nothing. He still has incredible value, and Fleury's going to be wanting to be on a good team. He's not going to want to say go to Calgary and go ahead and miss the playoffs just because he's now a starter. I don't think Fleury's going to want to be on a bad team either. Right? Maybe he would rather be on a good team and split the role with Murray. Maybe they can work out a compromise even with management where he sits down and says, look, I don't necessarily want to leave. I'm cool with Matt Murray winning the cup. I'm cool with Matt Murray being the number one 1A to my 1B. But instead of Matt Murray getting 60 starts, since he is a young kid, why don't we start him 45 games and give me the rest, or even 50 games and kind of split it more even so it's not as cut and dry and I can get my time in there, because, again, he is a kid and he could falter at any time. Maybe they would agree to that. Maybe Murray would agree, Fleury would agree, the team would agree, and maybe I would actually even be best for business. So maybe that would be okay with Fleury. But either way, no matter how this season resolves in the playoffs, we're headed for some asinine postseason drama in terms of postseason of the playoffs and the offseason drama, because that Fleury decision will basically – Fleury pretty much got the offseason by the balls. I mean, if Fleury throws out a request there – if Fleury throws out a request there, they're going to have to do something. Every team is going to call that's a contender. You're going to be dealing with some phone calls. You're going to have to try to get value and not get lowballed. Murray's going to then have to even have more confidence. He can start so many games. You're then going to have to worry about, can Zakov even start 20 games and you'd be okay with that? Jari's still probably not ready either. Maybe the Penguins even – I don't think they would, but maybe if Fleury requests, maybe the Penguins – could deny it and say, look, we can't get value and Zakov's just not ready to start 20, 30 games, so we're going to basically force you to stay here till the middle of the season next year. I don't think they would, because they're classy, and that would piss Fleury off, and you'd hate to see the relationship severed that way. But in terms of the best for the team, they might have to have that come-to-Jesus meeting with Lemieux and company and say, look, we might not be able to do this for him because it might screw us in the long run, and we might have to basically forgo next year just because this guy's unhappy. They might have to deny the trade if they can't get equal value. They're not going to give this man away. And if they don't think Zakov can start 20 games, then you almost can't trade Fleury. At minimum, you got to feel Zakov can start 20 games.
And that's what it comes down to, is what's the goaltending free agency market like? Because I think you'd want to get somebody like you had a couple years back at Thomas Greiss, who can start and be a step-in starter, someone like a Brent Johnson in the past. Because if Murray falters, you still need a starter. You know, best-case scenario is Fleury wanting to be there and agreeing to a 60-40 split, whether it's 60 him, 40 Murray, or vice versa. If he doesn't want to do that and he wants to go, he's meant so much to your organization that it's hard to not say no. I mean, it's hard to say, you know, it's hard to decline that offer.
Yeah.
But you got to look at it from a business perspective too. Who do we have that we can fill in your stead? If there's nobody there, does it make sense to let them out of their contract? No, it doesn't. You're going to have to keep them, and you might have to talk to them and say, I'm sorry, this is just how it's going to be for now. This is just how it's got to be for this year, and then we'll readdress and reassess. And then you look at, like, logistically, who would you send them to? You mentioned Detroit. And my immediate thought is, why would you send him to a contending team in your conference? You
want to
look out west.
Right.
Yeah. And who really out west is contending that needs a goalie? Not a lot of people. Maybe Dallas, but what are they going to do with their surplus of goaltenders then? You know, they would love to have somebody like Fleury, but they've already got Kari Lehtinen and Antti Niemi there. If memory serves right, is Antti Niemi.
Right. And I don't know, maybe St. Louis, and if Elliott comes in and doesn't perform and they get eliminated, maybe they lose favor with him, and maybe the Blues want to restart all over again because they basically have two goaltenders. But is the old adage that maybe you have two goaltenders, you have none? The Blues and Stars have two goaltenders that are splitting time equally. That might not be the best thing they want. Maybe those teams would prefer to have Fleury. And maybe then you could trade for one of them. Maybe the Penguins could say, okay, you want Fleury, we'll take Elliott or something like that. I don't know. Because they got to need probably somebody besides Zakov.
Yeah, and then the issue there becomes, what do you get in return? Do you go for a goalie or do you go for a forward? Because really, like, that to me is the necessary hole to fill if you trade Fleury. You can sign a backup goalie if you're comfortable with Matt Murray. They're a dime a dozen. There are so many Jeff Zakovs out there and people a little bit better that will sign for a minimum wage or $900,000 a year that won't break the budget. Great. But the Penguins need offensive depth, which is kind of absurd to say, but Kunitz isn't getting any younger.
Yeah.
And we've seen his struggles. I realize I'm doing the show with this. It's asinine to say this, that they need offensive depth. But you've got Kunitz, who's a proven winger. You've got Hornquist, that's a proven winger. And really, that's about it. You know, Phil Kessel is commanding his own line. Hagelin is on that line. Bonino's on that line. who's going to play with Crosby and Malkin? Kunitz is not getting younger. You've got Hornquist, who, all right, he's good. He's good in spurts. But that forms a whole line. That means to fill out a bottom, a second line, basically. Do you trade Fleury with the intent of taking him forward? Do you trade him in, with the intent of just freeing up cap space? Do you trade him with the intent of bringing in another goalie with it? It's a another logistical just layer to this that could possibly crop up if Fleury says, thank you guys, but it's time for me to move on.
It's going to be asinine, and when it's asinine, it is the best for business, for sports talk, for podcasts, for blogs, for any type of form of media, and also for Twitter. So the Twitterverse, these shows, any form of media with the Penguins, is going to be on fire in the offseason if Fleury would request that trade. I almost want him to a little bit, Nick. I almost want him to secretly to request that trade. And I almost want – can you imagine – he requests, and it might be the right call. I might have to do this too, and we've been talking about it now, and it almost seems like we're both kind of in that camp where Fleury requests a trade, you give it your go, you give it that A for effort, you try to call some teams, but you don't want to necessarily work with Detroit, even though they're the team that would maybe make the most sense, because you don't want them to be beating you in a playoff series with Fleury as a starting goaltender. That just looks ridiculous. And you're basically saving the franchise by giving them Fleury. You don't want to do that. You're looking at the West. Does he really want to go to those teams? You're going to have a whole can of worms there, and it might be best to basically sit Fleury down and get a psychologist in the room and say, look, we're going to need we'll do a 60-40 split. Do you want to do 55-45? Can we get Murray over here to agree to this? Can we do something? But we're going to have to keep you for probably one more year, and we're going to hope you don't go to the paper and change your whole personality into a heel turn on us because we just can't make this trade happen for you no matter what. But that would be almost the best for sports talk radio and Twitter, because that would really polarize things. Then you'd have some people maybe even pissed at the Penguin franchise that you're screwing over the long-term guy in Marc-Andre Fleury. But then again, Fleury is hated by so many that maybe they don't even care. But it would be fun. It would be fun and asinine for Twitter if Fleury requests that trade, especially if they have to deny it because they can't work out a deal with anybody or they feel like they have to keep him in terms of needing him to be a backup. Moving along, though, because we can talk Fleury all day in the offseason, and maybe we will. That maybe can foreshadow. Is there a concern, Nick, in terms of the Penguins closing out games in these playoffs? We saw it against Washington where they were still able to win. We saw it against Tampa Bay in Game 5 where the reason why they were trailing 3-2 in this series is because they allowed Tampa to come back and then win in overtime. We saw it even kind of tonight before the Rust Bowl where Tampa Bay found their legs, they found their burst, they were winning puck possession and offensive rushes. They never were doing that in the first two periods, but were doing it late in the third. They scored two goals. They almost came back. We were all rolling our eyes. Do you have a concern that a Stanley Cup champion just should not disgust you so much while they try to close out games?
I think there's some cause for worry, yeah. You, as you said, look at you can name three instances offhand where
and there's
the
others,
team that
sure.
was, yeah, that should have been put away. The team that should have been put away wasn't. And these are good teams, mind you. As I said in my article today, this isn't supposed to be easy. You're not going to cruise through this. It's not going to happen. You know, no cup has been won, except with the exception of LA a couple years ago when they pulled the old 76ers faux just about.
Yeah, they ran over.
Yeah, they swept like the first two rounds and lost two games total, the whole thing. Outside of that, outside of that, these are not easy things. You're going to face adversity. But if nothing else for the heartburn it causes, yeah, you worry about this because they're dominating, for absolutely dominating, controlling possession, just dominating on shots on net. They're firing so much rubber on Vasilevskiy. He's just letting him in by accident, and he did not look sharp tonight. There were at least two other goals that were left on the table there that lucky bounces or in-position teammates scooped away.
Well, they have their backup, too. To be fair to him, he's not the starter. He shouldn't even be in there. I mean, to be fair to him.
He's a 22-year-old.
Yeah, he's hard to be hating on him too much. He's in there in relief of Ben Bishop, but, yeah, he didn't play well.
And then the third period comes along, and suddenly it's a reversal of fortune. And it's consistent enough to where you're wondering, what is going on with these guys? Are they choosing to sit back And when the results continue to be this way, why do they keep choosing to sit like this? Or are they just wearing down or something? Or what's going on here? There's definitely some sort of issue, and I'd like to know what it is so it can be corrected, if it can be. But it's I wonder if it's them choosing to go into a shell or if they're just – they play an up-tempo game. It's been a long season, not just physically but emotionally. I wonder if it's just them getting tired after – having 20 minutes of or 40 minutes of strong legs, they just kind of give out a bit, and they get a little softer on their skates, and it gives Tampa and those kinds of fast teams the chance to pounce a bit more.
And maybe it takes playing more of the bottom six, which you do have confidence in, because the depth of this team, that bottom six of the Penguins, is now good, unlike the past playoff years. So maybe it takes maybe playing, you hate to say this, but maybe it takes giving Crosby and Malkin a bit of a rest early on in the third period, at least, to kind of get their legs fresh and allow those bottom six players to take over a little bit in the heart of the third period and then put back your stars in late in the third period for another surge to hold the lead. Because maybe those stars, when they are playing well, and we haven't seen too many of those playoff games where all of them were playing well, but tonight, Malkin, Crosby, Kessel, Letang, they all had it in this game when they had to, but they didn't have their legs in the late third period. So maybe they need a rest early on in the third period. Maybe you need more from Bonino and company in the beginning of the third period. I mean, it's hard to call for resting the best player in the world just to give him his legs. I'm sure people are going to criticize that he shouldn't have to rest to get fresh. But these are the playoffs. This is a gauntlet. You do whatever you got to do, and maybe it takes playing more of the depth late in the third period or even beginning of the third period when those guys aren't fresh. I mean, I don't know. Game seven, though, will be something else, Nick. Any thoughts on a key for you for that game seven? I mean, obviously the Penguins got to start off hot, but they almost trailed in this game. Tampa Bay had a goal that was disallowed. From then on, the Penguins were red hot. They were on fire. You need this same effort, but it is Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Game five, they were at their worst. Game six, they're at their best. Can we really stamp down, we're sure, which team's going to show up in Game 7, even though momentum should ride you to Game 7? What are the keys, though, for a Penguin victory in a Game 7?
They've always come out a little flat in the first period under the Sullivan era. It's just, you look back, and that's just kind of how it's been. And not sure why, but that's just kind of their trend. They're not generally the team that scores first. They're not generally the team that has their legs under them right away. And it more often than not works out for them, but it's game seven. I think you got to be ready to go from the bat. You got to make sure emotions are in check. You can't see Malkin take a retaliatory penalty like he did today. You can't see Letang trying too hard like he did last game and getting a negative four as a result. You got to see these guys play even-handed. You got to see them play level-headed. And I think that really is the biggest thing, because it's so easy to look at this game and go, this is game seven, this is big, and try to do too much and not play a typical game. You even look at what Max Talbot said after scoring two game-winning goals in Game 7. He didn't look at it as a special game. He looked at it as any other game, and that's the way to do it. You go out there thinking this is Game 7, we need to win, and you know what's going to happen? You're going to grip the stick a little bit tighter. You're going to overthink things. You're going to not elevate your game to where it needs to be. You're going to drop as a result. So I think the big thing is just approach it like any other game. And so far, they've been pretty solid at doing that. So I have confidence in that. But will it hold? Do we get Dr. Jekyll? Do we get Mr. Hyde? Don't know.
Every media member that was around this Penguin team going into this game six said they were loose, they were confident, they weren't stressed, they were relaxed. I even saw one national media member, I forget his name, that said in all his three decades of covering the sport, this is the most loose team he's ever seen going into an elimination game. Now, those are big words, and I'm not sure whether that's true or not, because there's been some great teams that won championships when they were facing elimination and had to go ahead and win those games. But the Penguins certainly delivered and showed up and appeared to be loose and appeared to be at their best and were flying throughout the game, maybe giving you the best overall effort this Penguin team has given you this entire series. So there's reason to believe they'd bring it to Game 7 because of the confidence they showed in Game 6. They were loose going into this one. Why not be loose going into Game 7, which also wow, people are going to refer to it as a cup final clinching game and a game to clinch the conference. It's also an elimination game. They lose that, they're eliminated. So it's going to give you the same level of intensity you'd figure, and maybe the same type of mentality they would have going into the game. Before we wrap this up here, who would you rather face in the West? I mean, San Jose right now seems like the team. They're kind of taking it to the Blues, who can't really find a goaltender and are waffling the goaltenders themselves. Ken Hitchcock has been criticized for that. He has been to 5 conference finals in his career and 2 cup finals and 1 a cup overall on his resume, but admittedly, it's been a while since he's been this far, and he does seem like a bit rattled. I'm not sure what's going on. Every day he has a press conference about why he wants to go with this goaltender. The next day, he gives you the reason why he wants to go with the other goaltender. So if you think the Penguins goaltender situation is asinine, go to the St. Louis Blues. But who would you rather face, Sharks or Blues?
Blues, and it's not even close. I mean, obviously, you don't accidentally get to a conference final of any sport, but their goaltending situation's in disarray, and I think their style of play is a little bit slower. It's a little more defensive, and the Penguins just kind of eat that up. I think the Sharks and Penguins would be ridiculously fun to watch. A lot of high tempo, a lot of great offenses, but I also think that San Jose is just on that extra level right now. And I don't think – I said this on Twitter the other day. I don't think the Penguins could take them. I don't think they could win a series against them. Now, they'll put up a hell of a fight. They'll stretch it 6 or 7 games, absolutely. But yeah. I think that San Jose is just a better team right now.
And we were saying, and everyone kind of was saying, that going into these Final Four, going into the conference finals, the Penguins were playing the best. They have the deepest team. They're the prohibited favorite to win the Stanley Cup, not only the Eastern Conference, but the Stanley Cup, even over a team like San Jose. But watching these conference finals, I'm with you. San Jose looks to be on a different level. They do look really, really hungry because, mind you, yes, it's been several playoff disappointments, but most of these Penguins have a lot of playoff games under their belt. Several of them have rings already. I know Kessel doesn't, and he's hungry and playing like it, but you go to the Sharks. You want to talk about hunger. Joe Thornton's starving. The guy's been to 1 conference final before this year in 2011 when they lost to Vancouver. He never had been to a conference final before that and was already in the league 10-plus years. He left Boston after being thrown out the door on a controversial trade. They went to 2 cup finals and won their first cup in 4 decades, and he had to watch that. And now he's back in the conference final on a turn-back-the-clock year where he gets 80-plus points after not doing that for several seasons. And his line with Pavelski is just clicking. They both are hungry. And that Sharks team, not only with the matchup and how they match up to the Penguins, I definitely think St. Louis would be an easy opponent for the Penguins. You don't want to say easy for a championship and a cup final, but they look like a worse Washington Capitals team. They're similar to the Capitals. They're slower than the Capitals are. They don't have a star player that can take over a game like the Sharks do, and I just can't imagine the Blues would win their first ever cup against the Penguins if the Penguins get there based on what they would have to do to get there and how they're constructed. But the Sharks are a different animal. That Sharks team, not only do they match up well and have a line that can beat you by itself like the Penguins do, but boy, there's no goalie controversy there. They got every one of those pieces from stars to defense, and they're playing really, really well, and just emotionally. I think if Joe Thornton gets to a cup final the first time in his career after a 20-season Hall of Fame tenure, it's going to be hard to see them losing. If they get there, it's going to be hard to see them losing, but the Penguins might be a Vegas odd favorite just for the fact what they can bring you on paper. But that would be a fun series, and I would be absolutely stunned if it didn't at minimum go 6 games and probably looking at 7. But I would probably be leaning towards picking the Sharks, which would be no different because I was the only member of PenguinsLeadership.com to not pick the Penguins to win the Cup when we did the brackets, and I was wrong. So, well, maybe I'll pick the Sharks and the Penguins will win the Cup and I can be wrong again. So you keep having me be wrong and the Penguins winning, that'll be fine. Anything else here, Nick, before we go? The Penguins get a win here. They move to Game 7. The best thing sports can offer you, and it offers you many great things, is Game 7. Nobody can really be unhappy about Game 7, even if your team's in there. Game 7 just always so entertaining and so good for the sport to have a Game 7 with these two teams in it. But We didn't get Bryce from Brooklyn call in. I had him the last couple shows where you were gone. But his streak, his Cowherd streak of calling in these postgame shows is snapped here, it looks like, at Game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals. We missed you, Bryce, from Brooklyn. We missed the fire that you dropped us. But I did finally jot down the number that he gave me. He told me I was allowed. And I keep asking him to follow me on Twitter. He said he's on Twitter, but I gave him the Twitter handle. He's yet to follow me. I told him to follow Penn's Initiative, even if he doesn't want to follow me. I don't think he's done that yet. We're trying to contact you, Bryce. I mean, all we get is the postgame shows. We appreciate that. We're trying to contact you. If you can find some way to contact somebody, you might land a T-shirt. But, Nick, any final words or maybe even a shout-out to another request from Bryce from Brooklyn? Because I'm trying to talk to this guy, and he won't follow me. He won't text back. I mean, I don't know what's going on.
The Bryce signal is definitely up and shining right here. We are waiting for you. It's in the sign of a penguin holding a telephone in front of a microphone. That's the Bryce signal we have for you.
I play Biggie for him. Come on.
Oh, see, what more can you want? Come on, Bryce. Now, just really impressed with the guy. For a casual fan, he's sharp. So, anytime he wants to call or talk, bring it. Absolutely. Heading into the next game, let's just do this again. You know, I think that's really the best thing you can offer. What you guys did today, do that again, because it worked out pretty well. And it could have been a lot farther than it really was. So I like that strategy. If I'm Mike Sullivan, I'm just like, yeah, last game worked. You know, let's try that again. My only regret is that I'm working a baseball tournament and I will not be able to have my trusty iPad with me to watch it. So I will be in the dark for a large part of it, relying only on ESPN or NHL update texts. And that's going to be brutal. It's going to be god awful. But if my suffering means they win, then I'm all for it.
Well, you hear that, Penguin fans? A postgame show minus Nick Case with Mike Ossie has meant a loss. So be nervous, and I believe I am available. So that show will get off the air. But you're also
shout out to the Wheeling Nailers punching their ticket to the Kelly Cup Finals, beating my former employers, as it were, the South Carolina Stingrays, and doing so, they came back from a 3-2 series deficit to do it. So
and further the curse of the Washington Capital franchise from the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Exactly.
They do it against the Capital.
There are a lot of layers to this story, but it possibly bodes well for the Penguins.
Yeah, first Kelly Cup final since 1993. So definitely some street for them, and congrats to them being there. What do we got on the website? Anything for the people, the fine people, I will be nice to them. A rare fine people. I'll say, and I won't call them buffoons right now. But the fine people.
No.
I
cranked out a nice piece today on how if you gave up before this game, then chances are the playoffs aren't for you. Just go ahead and pack it up and wait till October. We got some good stuff out there. Stephanie, spin me right on the Twitters. Wrote a piece very much in my corner saying I'm a Flurry person, but going to Murray is the right call. And it's just there's some good stuff up there. It's always good content. Go read it. If you can't read, just go look at the pictures. I always put pretty pictures in my articles. That's enough for you.
Yeah. And if you can't read, listen to these podcasts, which are also on the website, but yeah, there's analysis, there's entertainment, there's memes, so there used to kind of be memes. I got to kind of maybe change the phrase. I don't really have any more memes, but we've got to bring back the memes.
I think memes need to come back. I'm just going to start posting a crying Jordan a day. I'm just going to make that a thing.
Lord, I don't know when that's ever going to leave my life, but I don't think it ever will. It's going to be there forever.
I don't know. I cannot get enough of it. Like, even the most mundane ones I think are absolutely hilarious, and it's a blessing and a curse because, like, I'm looking at this thing, and this is stupid, but oh, my God, this is fantastic, you know?
People
are starting to make it creative now, and it's wonderful.
The best one I've ever seen, and I don't mean this in any form of criticism because he is a guy that I have talked to on occasion and belongs to the same country club as my grandparents. So with all due respect to Richie Walsh of KDK and CBS, the very best Michael Jordan crying meme that I've ever seen is somebody, and this was actually texted to me, so I'm not even sure if it's on social media and maybe it needs to get out there, but it was texted to me. Of Richie Walsh at PNC Park, crying Jordan with still the Richie Walsh hair. So that is the best one I've ever seen. And with all due respect to Richie Walsh, that is just phenomenal. And it was texted to me. It was not tweeted to me. So if it is not on social media, I'm tempted to put it out there, but I will let the person who texted to me do it. But that's phenomenal.
The best crying Jordan I saw was last night. It was a GIF. It was after the Raptors beat the Cavs. It was LeBron throwing the talcum powder in the air, and crying Jordan appeared and then disappeared as the talcum powder drifted away.
Oh, God, that is creative, but that's even something tying into how Jordan used to do that, and now LeBron's done it, and the next Jordan. That's clever. There's some poetry and symbolism in that one. That really makes you think.
It's beautiful. I mean, it's becoming layered. It's going from short story to novel, basically, and I'm curious to see where the epic of Crying Jordan goes next.
It's also nice that it is a Crying Jordan revolution, and it's not Crying Athlete X who wasn't the legend that is Michael Jordan, because as much as people are going to argue Lemieux, Gretzky, Crosby, Ovechkin now, or even Willie Mays, Babe Ruth, and those guys in baseball, Jerry Rice, Jim Brown, whoever in football, as much as there's always arguments on who maybe is the best ever in their sport, even though they're all legends and they're all up there, there really is no argument in basketball that Michael Jordan's the best. You can, you know, rank two through whatever after him, but everyone kind of agrees. It was one of the few things sports fans agree on is Michael Jordan's the GOAT of all basketball. And to have him be the Crying Jordan meme where we're basically making fun of him in a moment where he cried, and then having it put on everybody else who ever fails at anything in any walk of life, whether it be sports, entertainment, politics, or whatever, Donald Trump to the Miss USA pageant, that's just wonderful to me. The Jordan's the guy we're doing this to, because he seemingly was bulletproof. 6-for-6 in the finals, the MVPs, his career was the greatest of all time. He was bulletproof, and social media has made Michael Jordan not bulletproof anymore. How about that?
I love the fact that three generations know him for three different things, too. One generation knows him as the greatest basketball player of all time. Another generation knows him as a guy with a shoe. And a third generation now knows him as a meme. I think it's just as impressive of anything he did in basketball, is that for three generations, he's been three different things to different people, and that's just as amazing.
And as successful in all three of them, you could argue that the shoes and the meme are the two that he put the least effort in terms of the other one being the greatest basketball player of all time. And yet you could argue those two are even more successful just because how the success is never ending and there's no shelf life unlike an NBA professional career. And he didn't have to do anything. I mean, I agree to that shoe. And yes, I cried and go ahead and make a meme and that's it. And it's going crazy. It is never going to end really. And I kind of wish it would, but the success rate is off the charts. So the Michael Jordan crying meme. The Michael Jordan crying meme is going to be put on somebody. We will tell you that after Game 7. It will either be on Crosby. Maybe it could be on Malkin, Matt Murray, if the Penguins would lose. If they win, you could even see that on Valesky. You could see that on Boyle, maybe. You could see that on Cooper behind the bench. Maybe even Steven Stamkos skating around because he's not played at all in this series. And I don't know. I mean, I'll leave you with this, Nick, and I guess it'll be the last thing I'll ask you. I'll leave us with this. And we asked it before on every single postgame show because I just can't really believe that it's been going on and it almost seems like a fact now. Steven Stamkos not playing this series is getting swept under the rug, but if Steven Stamkos was there 100% healthy, I feel like the Lightning are in the Stanley Cup final. They're doing this without him. Every team's had their injuries. The Penguins are missing daily. They've had their injuries. But not only Ben Bishop, the starting goaltender, but the Lightning are doing this without Stamkos. I even saw a stat that this would be the first team to win a conference with their leading goal scorer from a regular season having not even played 1 minute of postseason action. If they would win the cup, he couldn't get his name on the cup. Legally, he could not even get his name on the cup. So that he's given you nothing. If he gave you even half of something, I feel like the Lightning would have this series, no?
Oh, yeah. Hard to disagree. How many of these games, only one game has been a blowout. And even then, you know, it wasn't that as big a blowout as it seemed. One goal scorer dominating turns around three or four of these games easily. And he's that difference. He's that kind of guy. So to think that they've been able to do this, it's impressive enough that they've made this go up seven games without him.
Yeah.
But
really is.
Add to that the fact that where they could be with him. Oh, it's something that Penguins fans are far too familiar with, you know. If only we'd been healthy. If only we'd had Crosby that postseason. If only we'd had Malkin that postseason. If only this, if only that. We understand. You're not going to get any tears from us, but we definitely understand.
And if you want anything that could be comparable to the Penguins offseason of Marc-Andre Fleury requesting a trade in terms of being asinine, the Tampa Bay Lightning win, lose, or draw are going to have an asinine offseason themselves, and it actually would even be more asinine if they would go ahead and win a cup without Stamkos in the playoffs at all, and then they go to back-to-back cup finals, and he leaves and walks to another team. That would really be nuts, but that's going to be something, what his value will be in that offseason with him as a free agent, whether they even want to bring him back, they can bring him back, whether other teams are still interested, what the money is now, because whether they go to back-to-back cup finals or they lose in game 7 of a conference final, they've had a lot of success without him. They're still a very, very good team. He's probably going to leave. He wants to get his money. He's a young guy with blood clots. We've seen him with Chris Bosh in the NBA and Pascal Dupuis in the NHL with the Penguins. You just don't know. It's a scary thing. So we wish him well health-wise, but we certainly are not going to be upset that he's not taking part in this series because that's a fact now. It's not even an opinion, really. Everything can be an opinion. That's a fact. If Steven Stamkos was in this series giving you 100% healthy Steven Stamkos, I can't believe they wouldn't win this series, even if it still goes 7 games. They might have been able to tie this game up before Russ scored, because they even said on the commentary they need a guy who can skate when they don't control the puck, and Stamkos can do that. There's nobody else in the Lightning that can win the single one-on-one battles as well as Stamkos could do against those Stars of Pittsburgh. And it's really, really unbelievable to me that they're in this 7-game series without Stamkos. I was even concerned they could even beat Detroit, and I didn't think much of the Red Wings. So that's a big hit, losing Stamkos, and they haven't missed a beat without him. So a lot going on the website, a lot going on PensInitiative.com, also PittsburghSportsInitiative.com. Maybe, Nick, you can help me figure this out. Is that going to be a brother, sister, or cousin website? What are we going to say? Brother, sister, cousin?
We'll go cousins.
Cousin? Okay, the cousin website of PittsburghSportsInitiative.com, where we have all this Penguin content, the podcast, all the articles, as well as the Pirates, who are in the regular season still, obviously, and the Steelers, who are in the off season going to training camp. So a lot to talk about with them as well, and maybe even some podcasts after the Penguins finally wrap up the playoffs, whether that be in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals or a Stanley Cup final loss or even a Stanley Cup championship. We just don't know, but watch the games because it's going to be entertaining, and you just really don't know anything until it happens. This is certainly a playoff that you cannot predict and makes them better in a way. So, Nick, happy to have you back. We'll leave, I guess, to you as a question mark if you're going to call in or not for the Game 7 post-game show. It might depend, I guess, if you're happy or not based on seeing the Penguins win or lose on your brief appearances watching on your iPad. Tell the family I said what up, and thanks for coming on the airwaves.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Mark. And or you're not Mark, you're Mike.
I am Mike.
It's past midnight. It's past midnight. That's clearly showing. You're
Mark
Mike.
Andre Fleury. Oh, I am Mike. Yeah. Two M.
Mark Osti, Mike Andre Fleury. I'm Nick Dupuis, calling for Pascal Case. It's always a pleasure to be here. Long time, first time. Thanks for taking my call. I'll hang up and listen to your reply. All the fun cliches. Mike, always fun. We'll do it again.
I should hang up after calling me Mark there, but yes. Thank you, Mickey, otherwise known as
there
Mickey.
You there you go. There you go.
All right, Nick. Good night, man.
Thanks.
That was Mickey Case. No, that was Nick Case. He called me Mark, but I'm going to give him a mulligan. I've met him personally. We met in person, so he knows my name. Followed me on Twitter a couple of years. We've done these podcasts. So I'm pretty sure, 99.9%, that he knows my name is Mike. Mike Osti. That is Nick Case. And I know he's not Mickey. He is Nick Case. Nor Nikki. I don't think he would want to go by Nikki either. That's kind of immature and juvenile. And, I wouldn't want to go by Mikey. I'm Mike. I'm not a 12-year-old. Anyway, that was my random little aside about my name and other people's names and why I want to be called Mike. Not Michael. Not Mikey. They're more immature, unless you're Michael Jackson, Michael Jordan, as we talked about. Even Michael Strahan. You should be Mike. As I am. Mike. I'm going to be great in the future, but I'll still be Mike. So for Nick Case, all of PensInitiative.com, as well as the outskirt cousin, second cousin, PittsburghSportsInitiative.com. Our sponsors, DK, PittsburghSports.com, and Dr. Sheeler, Sheeler Chiropractic. This has been another Radio Gold edition of Radio PI Stanley Cup Playoff postgame show, NHL's Eastern Conference Finals, Game 6. Penguins win 5-2 and take it to Game 7 of the ECF against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Game 7 is Thursday night. Big E, Shawn Michaels haven't played Rage Against the Machine in a while. You know what? They won. They're going to Game 7. I love some Shawn Michaels. I love the Sweet Chin Music, but I'm going to stick to the incumbent. I'm going to go to the original. We had him on the show. We haven't had Shawn Michaels on the show. I wish we could. Shawn Michaels, if you want to be on the show, we'll play your music forever. I'll probably stick with some Andrew WK, Party Hard, because Party Hard tonight, and maybe Party Hard some more, and Party Harder after that Game 7 if the Penguins win and go to the fifth Stanley Cup Final in franchise history. This has been another edition of Radio Gold here on the Pens Initiative Airwaves and the Radio PI Podcast Network. When it's time to party, we will-